John, this guy is flying along fat, dumb, and happy, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh. In his mind, we have a real panic situation. How do you get re-control of the situation? How do you avoid panic and really just kind of assess where you are and get back on the tracks?
Well, the big thing is realize that, yeah, you got a problem, but you don't want to get tunnel vision. You don't want to focus in on the fact that you've got a dead iPad or dead tablet, whatever, in your lap. You know, you still have to do all the other stuff. You still got to fly the airplane. Let's make sure that's first and foremost. We got to don't want to lose altitude. We don't want to get off heading. The airplane's still running fine. We got plenty of gas. The weather's not a problem, but we got a situation we got to deal with. So we got to stop, think about it for a minute. Initially went through some of the options that we've got, and you got to assess each one of them and decide what the best course is. And I think having a logical approach to that helps. It takes some of the panic out of it. And you think about, okay, let's go through the options and decide on each, or the pros and cons of each one. And the way to do that is by thinking some of this stuff through beforehand too, and knowing what each one of those options entails. We blew it by not having a backup. So, okay, we got that, and we're going to have to confess our predicament here. That we're required to do that. We need to do that, communicate with the controller, and I think some of that alone will help reduce the stress level too, because the controller is going to come back and say, okay, what do you need? Just that alone may be sufficient to calm you down and realize that, okay, this is not an emergency situation. It's an unfortunate situation, and we're going to have to deal with it and deal with it the best we can.
Bob, don't we as pilots sometimes compound our problems? You know, we make a small mistake and then turn it into a big mistake by trying to cover up our self-inflicted pain.
I agree. There is assistance available out there that this pilot should take advantage of. Clearly, he should state, as John said, to ATC that he has a problem and let them know what the problem is. And if he requires information at this time in order to approach this airport, he should ask for it and then proceed to set himself up for the approach. But there is assistance available.
This is really one of those areas, though, where up to a certain point in our flying career, most pilots are scared to death of ATC. And they don't look upon ATC as a friend. They look upon ATC as an adversary. And how many people are going to admit to an adversary that, hey, I just blew it? And how do you work beyond that, Wally? Is this something that's going to come natural to a pilot in a situation like this?
Not at all. No, I hear what John's saying about it's best to confess, and I certainly agree with that. But real life is most of us don't want to confess to ATC on the air where other people can hear it, anything that we don't have to, because we expect that we're going to get a call from the FAA, we're going to have to write letters, we're going to have to do a lot of things. So I think the natural reaction is to try to somehow make this work.
And how can I get out of this?
Right. How can I get out of this without telling anybody?
Well, that may happen of its own accord when this iPad cools down some.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's like, you know, the airport's right over the next hill type routine that has gotten us all in trouble.
And my gas gauge is really not on empty. The gas gauge is wrong.
But since we have the opportunity to sit here in the chair and think about it, it's a lot easier for us, you know. But I think if you look at a little risk assessment tool here for a moment, what's the risk? Oh, I'm a proficient pilot. I can make this approach. My GPS is working good. My airplane's running fine. There's no risk there. What's the risk? Well, if I bust an altitude, and I don't know about where the cranes are here, I could die. I could actually kill myself. And you can alleviate that risk simply by saying, ATC, I need to know some numbers. And I think when you look at it from that risk assessment thing, you can take all that risk out of this approach as opposed to maybe not having to fill out a piece of paper, but risking your life. Pretty easy trade, I think.
Jeff, distractions are always a problem in the cockpit. And at the moment this occurs, this is a big distraction. And we need to move beyond that. And, it sounds simple. But once again, I think what Wally's saying there is, boy, if I just keep pressing on, I get on the ground. I know how to do this. But how smart is that?
Well, I think Wally summed it up in saying that, you know, you got to look at what's the risk benefit here, right? You know, what's the worst outcome of owning up and saying to ATC, you know what, I don't have the NOTAMs and I can't get a hold of the approach plate. I just need you to read me a couple things. I mean, presumably you fly the approach okay. The worst possible thing, worst, is someone may give you a call and ask, well, how did that situation come about? And you explain it. And we're all people, and probably nothing comes of it. So what's the worst thing that happens? Otherwise, you know, you run into a crane. And I think if you look at it that way, you're able to step aside from the distracting factor, the you know, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? Like, this just isn't a big deal. A lot of the distraction is the emotional charge that goes with it. You can defuse the emotion, look at it a little more objectively, you know. And as far as you said about, you know, asking ATC, you think about people. Right. I mean, when somebody asks you for help, I mean, how does it make you feel? You feel great. You're like, hey, I helped you out. And you got to think that there's a controller sitting somewhere in a tower or
that
a
needs
facility.
To be validated.
Yeah. Well, why not? I mean, you know, how are they going to you ask them for some help? They're going to feel good about it as long as they're not trying to balance 18 other things, in which case they'll get somebody else to help.
And also, you know what you said, you don't want to make this situation worse by trying to do some of the other things, by covering up or by, you know, some people might just cancel and try to go on their own.
Oh, yeah.
With, you're in VMC on top, you know, maybe I can go find a hole somewhere and find an airport or something. Trying to take a situation that's really not that bad and through their reluctance to confess their problem to ATC, turning it worse.
Yeah, it really gets, you know, it gets to the point where you really need to slow down, take a deep breath, and boy, how many times is that really the answer in a situation? Because, you know, stress is real, frustration is real, and self-inflicted pain is really, you know, that's real pain.
And this is, to some extent, self-inflicted pain.
Absolutely.
Can we talk about using the iPad?
Yeah.
Let's go into that a little bit, because the iPad does present some problems in terms of use. One of them is indicated here, overheating the iPad. But my experience with applicants on instrument tests, in at least two or three occasions, the iPad led to problems because the user was not all that familiar with his iPad and at critical points lost his page on the or lost his approach chart and then struggled to get things under control while trying to hand fly the airplane. Subsequent disasters in terms of the results on that practical test. So using an iPad requires some training on your part and in and out familiarity with it using that piece of equipment. Having backup charts, that's really invaluable. And of course, when I do an instrument practical test, I do require the student or the applicant to demonstrate that he can deal with a chart book and not lose his page and find charts in that chart book. And I guess, Wally, you do the same thing pretty much on the test. You allow use of the iPad as well.
If they come with an iPad, they're welcome to use it,
yes.
As most people do nowadays, but they also have to be able to handle an iPad failure that could happen at any time during the test.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm going to want to see them.
Whether they use a backup electronic device or paper charts, whatever they've chosen in their operation to use, they can expect that they'll probably get an opportunity to use that sometime during the test.
Yes, absolutely.
Would you accept that they asked ATC?
That could be an alternative.
That would be an acceptable backup.
I would consider that an acceptable alternative.
I wouldn't go there and test it. I do because I want to see them use that chart book. The chart book does offer some problems. It flips closed. They lose their page. They don't have an elastic band or a clip to maintain their position. They can't find the chart in the chart book when they need it because they just haven't done that. And they're flipping through trying to find the chart that's maybe listed under a different name. If they went to the front and looked at the index, they'd be able to find it.
They're not under any stress at that point either.
Oh, but I want to see the paper plates used and then be familiar with using them. So it's just not totally iPad.
What if they don't bring plates, paper?
Then they're going to have a problem because I tell them beforehand –
Or a second electronic device.
They could have a second electronic device. That's fine, but that's going to fail too because I want to see the use of the paper plates.
I'm not sending any applicants.
No. And of course, I don't keep this a big secret. The recommending instructors are aware of this, and the applicants are aware that they need to bring paper plates with them as well.
How does that translate to the real world? You must have a conversation with the applicant before you sign them off, assuming they're successful.
Like, yes. Well, it translates to the real world because if an iPad battery dies, or if the unit malfunctions, or if you, as Jeff said, it falls on the floor and slides under the seat, you need to be able to deal with the paper plates. And it's amazing that skill does not develop if they are totally using an iPad. They have real difficulties in handling the paper plates.
Let's look at what you've lost when you lose your iPad, and it's the only thing you have. You need a bunch of information that is not now at your fingertips. What are you going to ask ATC for? And do most folks realize, you know, what a valuable resource ATC is? John, can you take us inside the controller, room here and tell us what you got to help us out here and what kind of stuff can we ask you for in the case of us needing assistance?
Bottom line is pretty much anything. One of the things that we need and we're required to do by regulation as pilots is to familiarize ourselves with all pertinent information before the trip, and that includes things like FDC NOTAMs, the stuff that's buried in those the books that no one ever looks at. But if you get any of the pre-flight briefing packages, they'll contain all that stuff. There'll be the local NOTAMs, the DNOTAMs, the FDC NOTAMs, all that stuff, plus the weather. PIREPs, all that stuff. And we package all that in either paper. You know, the airlines used to generate hundreds of sheets of all that stuff. And, today we can either do that in our iPad or with a paper printout. The controller has access to all that same stuff. The problem or the big point is that the controller doesn't know what you need to know. And you need to know how to ask the right questions. If you ask the controller for the approach plate, and again, not being a pilot, even if they are pilots, they may not know. But you're going to need, okay, this is what I need. I need the inbound course. I need the frequency. I need the first crossing altitude, second crossing altitude. There's a lot of stuff on an approach plate that you don't need to know. You probably don't need the MSA and some of that kind of stuff. But you need to know the right questions to ask. Then, and the controller has that. They have it right in front of them in a usually in a separate electronic display. NOTAMs will be in another page in their display, and you're going to need to ask them for that. You may need to ask them for any FDC NOTAMs, which will be in another area. Changes to procedures, changes to the missed approach, changes to the obstacle departure procedure. Unusable radials, all that stuff that's buried in the FTC NOTAMs, because you have nothing now. So you need really to know all the right questions to ask.
John, John, if I ask a question of the controller, what are my minimums for this approach? I'm a Category B aircraft. Will they know the answer to that?
They should be able to read the B line off there. But there's other stuff that goes into it. In this case, the B, Category B, had certain published NOTAMs, but then you got to go into the remarks or the notes. And for an inoperative mouser, you got to add this. And I wouldn't expect them to be able to do all that stuff either. Yep. And the minimums were temporarily raised because of the construction crane. So you got to know the right questions to ask.
Yeah. Well, and doing that efficiently, I mean, because, you know, you do not. It's not like you're the only guy on frequency here. And you literally – you know, you can turn this into a very, very adversarial situation by asking this guy foolish questions or getting, carried away, with the situation. So you really need to compose yourself with regard to what do I need to get this airplane safely on the ground and do that really, really precisely and professionally. Because if you don't, I think most, you know, the tolerance of most controllers is going to be pressed to the limits here. If, you know, if you're sounding like the village idiot here, you know, you're going to be in the penalty box, you know, pretty quickly.
And it depends upon how much frequency time they have and how much time they have to look this up. Do they have another controller that can, or a supervisor or somebody who can do all this legwork for them while they're doing it? And as we said in the response, there may be times and places in the country where you just are not going to be able to do this and you're going to have to figure out something else.
Yeah.
You know, don't try this at Teterboro at 4 o'clock on a Friday
afternoon.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen, you know. And also you could be out in an area where you got intermittent radio coverage, out in a rural area. So it's one source, but it may, you got to go into this knowing that it may not work.
And unless we send the wrong message here, I mean, we're taking this, you know, to an extreme,
right,
to emphasize a point. And the point is you should have had a backup plan.
Exactly.
Okay. And
exactly.
The backup plan eliminates the need for you from tying up a frequency and, you know, putting others, you know, at risk by ruining the frequency.
With regard to the approach plates, we've talked about backing those up with a hard copy. But with regard to the NOTAMs that you're talking about, John, and the weather, they're simply a couple keystrokes away in your pre-flight planning from printing those out.
Yep.
You could do that very easily on flightplan.com. And yes, it may give you 22 pages, but it's going to give you the complete weather for your route, as well as the NOTAMs for your destination and your alternate, and you've got a hard copy of that. Yeah. And that's not an onerous task to get that information and have it available to you in the cockpit as a backup.
And that's the key word right there, having it as a backup.
Right.
And
right.
So,
I mean, so often we talk about planning, and this is just a classic example of a failure to plan. You know, or you could call it complacency, because this guy flew it all the time, and it always worked. But the fact of the matter is, you know, you need to plan for the worst situation, not the best situation. And in this case here, the guy just didn't do that.
This fellow started his approach planning en route rather than pre-flight approach planning.
Yes, that's a good way of phrasing it.
But he said, but I do this every week, and they always give me the same approach.
So
what could be different?
What could be different? Sure.
Yeah. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Don't forget, even if he gets all the approach information, that's nice, and he may even think he knows most of the approach information, but what if he has to do a missed approach? Now he's really busy, and he's really keeping controllers busy.
Well, and where's his airport diagram once he gets on the ground? Yeah. In a case of an airport which he's not really familiar
with. Which has a lot of construction on it, and closed taxiways and stuff. But, you know, in that case, more than likely, they'd just give him, you know, a brief runway heading in 3,000 or something like that for the missed approach.
I think, you know, it's the relevant point here is the, you know, the electronic devices are relatively new to the system. People are trying them out. People are using them on a more regular basis. But it comes at some peril. And there are challenges that occur. John, you were sharing a story with us about flying up near Canadian airspace with your electronic device.
Mark,
surprise.
Myself. We're flying Oshkosh, and we were using an iPad with a 4Flight on it, and we were near the Canadian border, just south of Lake Erie, and ATC cleared us direct to a fix, and Mark was tapping on the iPad, trying to get the fix to come up, and he accidentally tapped on an airport in Canada, and box pops up and says, "You don't have a Canadian subscription." And the dialogue was to enter your credit card number and purchase that subscription. The problem was we couldn't get out of that loop every time you touched the iPad. And it was kind of bumpy, you know, so your fingers bouncing around in there. We got stuck in this loop of tap credit card. And it finally had to reboot the iPad to make it go away.
And that was a two-pilot situation.
Two-pilot situation.
Bring that down to a one-pilot situation. Who's tapping, who's rebooting,
and
who's flying
exactly.
The gosh darn
exactly.
airplane.
Oh, they're all the same guy.
Yeah.
So a good plan and a backup plan, and I think it was really relevant to listen to our two examiners here, you know, talking about people coming in to the system and wondering, hey, what can I use? And then you showing them, yeah, you can use this thing, but guess what? When it fails, if you don't have a backup, that's just not going to work as you move down the line. And a lesson learned very, very early.
Yeah. Personally, I do use an iPad for all of that stuff, but personally I have my iPad and then I have my old iPad available on board, fully charged, and I have the app loaded on my iPhone. So I have two electronic backups.
Isn't it just like any other tool? You know, it can be very effective, used properly,
yeah.
Improperly, it can cause a lot of damage.
Yep.